You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Coming up, food insecurity is a big problem throughout Wisconsin. We'll learn about what can be done to alleviate the issue.
Right now, we get the latest in national political news.
And there's a lot going on. The Senate was unable to come to an agreement on gun control measures, so House Democrats are now forcing the issue in their Chamber of Congress.
And Donald Trump's campaign is facing a shakeup following the firing of campaign manager Corey Lewandowski. Joining us now to give us the latest is Paul Singer. He's the Washington correspondent for USA Today. Paul, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Paul, we're going to start with the breaking news. Last week we had the Democratic filibuster in the Senate. This week we have a sit-in in the House. Set the stage. What's happening there?
Yeah, you know, I teach journalism, and I teach my students that you can't filibuster in the House, and apparently I'm wrong, because what is happening right now is a bunch of Democrats essentially are filibustering in the House. They have staged a sit-in. They refuse to return to order. The chairman of the proceedings gaveled it closed and said, well, since we can't have order, we're just going to go into recess, and the Democrats have continued to sit there and talk about wanting a gun vote.
How unusual is this?
It's weird. I've never seen anything like it. Now, I will say, in 2008, Republicans did something sort of similar. Democrats tried to recess the House for the summer. Republicans wanted a vote on oil drilling. Democrats said no and voted to recess and close the House, at which point the Republicans refused to leave and continued giving speeches for several days, actually. The Democratic leadership at the time went so far as to turn off the lights and shoo all the reporters out of the chamber. So Republican leadership has not turned off the lights yet. There's no C-SPAN cameras, but C-SPAN is now airing it via some congressman's live Facebook stream. So modernity may be winning out here.
Wait, so C-SPAN, as I understand it, wasn't airing it because it was not officially gaveled into session. Is that right? So why can't they just show up and broadcast anyway? Why do they need some guy's Facebook feed?
Yeah, C-SPAN doesn't actually run the cameras in the chamber. All the cameras in the chamber, in the House and the Senate, are run by the U.S. Congress and controlled by the leadership, that is, the Republican leadership in this case. And they only provide a feed while the Senate and the House are in session. So as soon as it was Congressman Ted Poe who was presiding over the chamber at the time. As soon as he gaveled and said, we are out of session, the stream cuts off. And no reporters are allowed to have video, and no independent cameras are allowed in these chambers. The only TV cameras we have are the House cameras that feed C-SPAN. So C-SPAN had no way to get pictures either. So what they've been doing is just basically using pirate video from lawmakers on the floor who are broadcasting with Facebook or Periscope or other sort of live streaming apps.
Is it just a single congressperson who's broadcasting, or is there more than one?
Well, it was Congressman Beto O'Rourke from Texas had been doing it the most on Facebook Live recently, but there's been a couple other members who have been Periscoping it. I think Periscope actually put up a channel where you can see all the feeds that are coming in. It's kind of wacky.
Well, Congressman John Lewis from Georgia has been leading this, as I understand it. He's a civil rights icon, and he had this to say earlier today.
Deadly mass shootings are becoming more and more frequent. Mr. Speaker, this is a fight. It is not an opinion. We must remove the blinders. The time for silence and patience is long gone. We are calling on the leadership of the House to bring common sense gun control legislation to the House floor. Right. Give us a vote. Right. Let us vote. We came here to do our job. We came here to work. The American people demand an action.
And Paul, in your years covering Congress, hearing that quote there from Congressman John Lewis, what do you think about how this could resolve and what it means?
Well, you know, there are few people in Congress that have the kind of credibility of a John Lewis to speak on this kind of, civil disobedience, basically. I mean, this is where he came from. He came out of the civil disobedience, the civil rights movement. And you know, Lewis's argument, and the argument of Democrats in general here, is not that Congress has to pass a gun control bill, but they want to get a vote. They believe they have the right to have a vote. Now, in the Senate a week or so ago, Democrat Chris Murphy did the same thing. He took to the floor for 15 hours and basically said, I'm not going to give up the floor until I have a promise that we'll get a vote. And sure enough, last week, this week, I've lost track of my days, I guess it was earlier this week, the Senate did vote on four gun control measures. All four were defeated, so there you go. And now there's some talk of a possible compromise measure. I presume the House Republicans will offer up some sort of a gun control measure. In fact, there's already a couple they've proposed. Again, ones that Democrats won't be able to swallow, but at least they'll get a chance to vote on them. So maybe they'll do that. But again, keep in mind, part of the problem here is that the House is supposed to go into recess on Friday for the week and not come back until after the 4th of July, and Democrats want to vote before then. We'll see if that's possible.
Well, you said these would not be votes that would be passed in the House, even should they get a floor vote. But what would those votes mean politically and maybe symbolically?
Well, Congress is basically all about symbolic votes now. That's all they're for. And to give you the example, in the Senate, there was, you know, the issue, of course, as I'm sure your listeners are familiar, you know, what should we do? Should we expand background checks? Well, the Democrats proposed an amendment to expand background checks to additional types of gun sales. The Republicans offered alternative language that would provide more money for the background check system, but then create some limits on background checks that aggravated the Democrats. So the Republicans could vote against the Democratic bill, the Democrats could vote against the Republican bill, and then they could both issue press releases saying it was the other guys that voted against doing something on background checks. So that's the symbol. I mean, what you end up having is votes that are being cast simply to make a political point, not to actually address any point of actual government policy.
But they do create political pressure, don't they? This kind of action?
Well, presumably. I mean, I guess the reason that there were votes in the Senate this week was because of the pressure that was begun by Mr. Murphy's filibuster. It, presumably also, this event going on today in the House raises the pressure on House Republican leadership to offer some sort of a vote on some sort of a gun bill. But I can virtually guarantee you it's not going to be a gun bill the Democrats are going to want to vote for.
We're talking to Paul Singer right now, Washington correspondent for USA Today. We're going to move on and look at the Trump campaign. A presumptive GOP nominee, Donald Trump, made news this week, and he fired his campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski. How do you read that move? What does it signal?
Well, if nothing else, it signals a transition in the Trump campaign. This is a campaign that has been largely the brainchild of Donald Trump. I mean, it just sort of runs with his stream of consciousness. And Mr. Lewandowski was sort of the perfect channel for that. Now there has been a bit of a power struggle inside the campaign, clearly, and it looks like the winners of that struggle were Mr. Trump's family and sort of a more professional class of a political consultant represented by Paul Manafort. I mean, I think what you'll see is this: a campaign can't be one guy and a couple of dudes in the back room thinking, I think I'll tweet something. You know, they have to have a broader strategy, a bigger staff, more people on the ground, more targeting of their advertising, et cetera. And I think that's what this is a transition to, is a more, forgive the wording, a more professional campaign.
And is that something that you see Donald Trump, the candidate, embracing? I gather Lewandowski's theory had sort of been let Trump be Trump.
Yeah.
And you expect to see a transformed candidate along with building that infrastructure you were talking about, communications and a ground game and all of that stuff.
It's hard to tell. I mean, he gave a speech today that was a very forceful attack on Hillary Clinton, but it was delivered in a much different way. It was a much lower volume. It was not at a giant rally. It was a much smaller crowd. It was handled with a teleprompter, with a prepared speech, prepared remarks. So there you have what looks like a more polished candidate delivering a very strong sort of bare-knuckle message without yelling and flapping his arms around, and maybe that is part of the transition you'll see.
News also broke this week that Donald Trump's campaign budget was not looking so in the black, especially compared to Hillary Clinton's. As a, you know, one of the, well, we assume a very wealthy person who doesn't especially need to rely on this, what is the signal to have to be kind of in the red, not doing so well with fundraising?
It's kind of stunning. I mean, you wouldn't anticipate that he would be so low on cash on hand. I think we said he had, you know, less than $2 million cash on hand at this point, which is striking. It really is unusual. Now, right, here's where we get to answer the question. Does Donald Trump have a lot of liquid assets? Does he have a lot of cash lying around he can infuse into his campaign? We don't know. But this, again, is the point that Trump has had difficulty getting big donors to sit down and write big checks. That stage of the campaign has to begin now because Trump is going to need money, whether it's his own or somebody else's. He can't run for president without money, no matter how much free media we give him.
We're going to move on to look at the Democratic side of things. Bernie Sanders acknowledging a bit of doubt on C-SPAN this week. Here he is.
It doesn't appear that I'm going to be the nominee, so I'm not going to be determining the scope of the convention.
Now, he's being asked about whether he would be delivering a speech at the upcoming Democratic convention. What does Bernie Sanders' tone say to you along with those words we just heard?
Well, I think he's understanding that you know, we've moved past the competitive portion of the nomination. He hasn't quit the race. He hasn't announced that he's dropping out, and he hasn't endorsed Hillary Clinton. But he's clearly getting to the point where now the issue is, let's have a conversation about policy. Let's try and shape the platform in ways that we like and try and shape the party rules in ways that we like. But the point of combat now becomes beating Donald Trump, not beating Hillary Clinton. I mean, I think that's pretty clear from where he has been trending, and I think what you heard today is really just the next step in that of Mr. Sanders sort of bearing the hatchet or attempting to start bearing the hatchet with Ms. Clinton.
Does he still command the kind of sway that he seemed to a couple of months ago?
Yeah, I think he generates a lot of loyalty amongst his fan base. I think it has been clear all along that a lot of these Democrats were going to endorse Hillary Clinton at some point when Mr. Sanders dropped out. I think there is probably still a rump caucus that is very unhappy and wants more liberal progressive views reflecting the party. There is still a big protest rally expected in Philadelphia, the Democratic Convention, by Sanders supporters who still feel alienated, still feel that they've been sort of locked out of the process and are still mad. So I don't think that I don't think this is over in the sense that the movement that he inspired goes away. The question is, can he effectively channel most of that energy into defeating Donald Trump and therefore electing Hillary Clinton instead of just creating a ruckus for the Democratic Party?
Paul, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Veronica. Be well.
That was Paul Singer, Washington correspondent for USA Today. He joined us there to give us the latest in national politics.
Coming up after the news, the problem of food insecurity in Wisconsin is a growing concern. We'll learn about what steps can be taken to address the issue. You're listening to Central Time.